You're listening to Hearth Casual, the Hearthstone podcast for tavern brawlers, dungeon runners, and everyone else enjoying the game off the ranked ladder.
Well met, Hearth Casuals, and welcome to episode 17 of Hearth Casual. This week, we will dress up to take down the Headless Horseman. We'll discuss dual class arena, and I imagine we will be making some predictions about BlizzCon 2018, most or all of which I'm pretty sure we'll be wrong. I am Brian Black, and with me once again, of course, is Mr. Kevin Ellis. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going? How did you know I was dressed up, though? I'm a little weirded up by that.
Well, it's that time of year. It's near the end of October. Everyone's dressing up. What are you dressed up as?
I'm a nerdy corporate guy. I just haven't changed out of my work clothes yet.
I am dressed up as a horde-loving late-night jogger, because I just got a sweatshirt. I got a hoodie from Jinx that has a horde symbol on it. And you'll probably, if anyone's going to BlizzCon, you'll probably see me wearing it a lot.
Oh, yeah. As long as it's horde, man, that's all that matters to me. I don't think I'd be on this podcast if you were a dirty ally, my friend.
Well, I mean, I am bifactional, but I'm mostly horde.
Okay, well, yeah, that'll count. That's fine.
All right, well, man, we are just literally a week away from everything BlizzCon, and of course there's a whole lot to talk about when it comes to BlizzCon, and we will get to it near the end of the show. But let's start off as we always do. Kevin, what the heck have you been playing recently?
So honestly, the arena, of course, because we've got the dual class deal going with the Hollow's End event. This is just the time of year to do that, you know. Like, I typically hit rank 5 every month, as you know, I've mentioned. But this may be one in which I don't. I'm actually just still hovering around 8. And so I'm kind of like on the fence about that. I don't know how I feel about it, honestly, because I do want to at least get in there and get that golden epic at the end out of the loot chest there.
400 sweet dust right there.
Or a really sweet golden epic. I mean, you never know. But yeah, odds are it's going to be something terrible and go in that category. But yeah, so I'm considering doing that, and the way that I'm going about doing so I have played on the ladder a little bit, and I'm going about it with Even Shaman. So this is actually a deck I've never tried, because I never actually unwrapped Hagatha from the Witchwood, right? The hero card. And like, I mean, it was always a card that I wanted to try out, because, you know, it was kind of the flagship card of the Witchwood and all these other things. I just never really got around to doing it. And like, you know, Shaman is one of my golden classes on this account I'm playing on right now. So it's kind of one of those things where, and I'll probably go on a rant about this someday, but I don't feel as incentivized to play my golden classes, because I could be working on that toward that with others rather. So, you know, I've been hesitant to even throw down and get Hagatha and such, but, you know, I was looking at HS replay. I was checking out some other things to see what decks were doing well. I was actually doing terrible with things like Odd Paladin and that sort of thing. I don't know why, but Even Shaman is actually really clicking with me. And so I've started to really get why the Even archetypes work really well. And it's because you really never float mana at all. Like, there's right. always something you can do with the mana. I mean, if you've got turn 3, you can do a 2-drop and a totem. You can turn 5, same thing. You can do a 4-drop and a totem, etc. And so, like, you just never don't have something to put on the board. And it's cool. Honestly, I love that a lot of the cards actually have initiative, too, in the sense that so the specific copy that I run has, of course, both Murkspark Eels. That's the battle cry, 2-mana, 2-3. Gives if your deck has even cost cards, deal 2 damage. And then, of course, Fire Plume Phoenix does that again at 4 mana, 3-3 body, but still Battlecry, deal 2 damage. And so when you're just kind of like chipping away with that kind of thing, protecting a Primal Fin Totem or Flame Tongue Totems, obviously, very good. And honestly, the deck, what surprised me the most is how much of the elemental package this thing runs. Like, that I did not see coming, honestly. But yeah, I mean, both fire elementals, Alakir in this particular list, Kalumos, which is super cool. I do, by the way, I have a golden Kalumos. I don't know if I told you this.
Nice.
Real pumped about that.
Means but you get golden earth elementals if you so choose.
That's right. And I just have never chosen that. But But I could and definitely should. One of these days, when I do it, Brian, I will take a screenshot and I'll tweet it right at you. We'll get that to you. So it's been a lot of fun. This particular list, too, runs a couple higher end cards, like the Lich King is still in this. Of course, Hagatha that I mentioned, and Double C Giant. It's the giant that costs one less for each other minion on the battlefield. There's so many decks out there right now that spread out pretty far. Like Odd Rogue does it. Odd Paladin definitely does it. So many of these others. Like if you play any sort of variant of Zoo Warlock too, same thing. So there's just a lot of stuff on the board, and you can throw these guys down for crazy cheap. So that's cool. But I got to shout out Hagatha. Now that I've had the chance to try her, it really is super fun because like, Shaman spells are not great. I mean, there's, of course, some good ones for sure. And, of course, there's some that'll completely overload you and not do exactly what you want in that situation. But there are some that are really not good. Like, you have to get really creative on how to get the most out of them. And I like that,
plus,
honestly.
Plus four to totems. Plus four health to totems. Great.
It can be. Yeah, for sure. But honestly, like I kind of like getting spells like that off of Hagatha and then trying to think through, okay, well, is there a situation in which I can use this A and then B, what's the best situation? What can I actually make out of this thing? And I don't know. I like any deck that forces you to get creative in the middle of what's otherwise a pretty straightforward strategy, if that makes any sense.
For sure. I mean, one thing I like to do when I've played even Shaman is once Hagatha's on the board and you play something and get stuff like Spirit Echo or the other spell where it gets Death Rattle and it returns back into play. There's some tricky stuff that you can do with that, especially Spirit Echo's great because that deck more often than not runs a lot of heavy Battlecry stuff, so you can often Spirit Echo some Battlecry things and get extra value out of it. I've got to say the deck became a lot stronger in Boomsday once I'm forgetting the name of the elemental offhand, but the two mana elemental that Battlecry add a random elemental to
your hand.
It's a
Menacing Nimbus.
There you go. That made the deck so much stronger in terms of just being able to maintain not only putting stuff on the board, but throwing unexpected things out for your opponent to handle. I mean, I've had games where I would play Menacing Nimbus and get Lyra, and it's great.
Oh, yeah, that's excellent. And I mean, you know, you can get Alakir's, you get another copy of Kalamos. And I mean, just the fact that you get another elemental at all, it doesn't even matter what it is, because it could be the dinkiest little tiny elemental possible. And then it's a trigger for Kalamos himself or some of these other features. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a good card. Any card that gives you a little extra value or an additional card with just your one play. I mean, we talked a couple episodes ago about card advantage. That's one way to keep it, honestly.
Yeah, and when you're able to put out extra stuff, when you're able to put out cheap totems, when you use the totem, put more Murlocs out and all that stuff, that means less for you to have to necessarily play from your hand all the time. You're putting a board out there that forces your opponent to use resources that they may not want to use right away. And then your heavy hitters come onto the board and your opponent's really wondering what the heck they're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a solid deck. I mean, it's not unusual that even Shaman, it's the best deck to play against everything out there. That doesn't mean that it wins against everything more than any other deck, but it really doesn't have a weakness to any of the popular decks out there. It has kind of the same chance against every deck, I would say. We talked briefly about polarity, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, even Shaman does not suffer from polarity issues.
Not as badly, because sometimes you just win, like, honestly.
Yeah.
And apologies for dogs in the background here. But
sorry.
Yeah, sometimes if you just land the perfect Flame Tongue Totem in early game, and then you look up at their health total and you've not even really been following along, but you notice it's turn four and they're at 15 or something. And you're sitting there going, okay, I just need to do a few more things to close this out and we're fine. So yeah, you'll actually have a lot more games than you would think. And Corpse Taker, I didn't even mention, but man, that's the KFT card with the gain taunt, divine shield, lifesteal, or wind fury if you have any of those things.
Are you running a harpy in it?
Not a harpy, but I'm running Alakir.
Oh, yeah, Alakir has wind fury. My bad.
So Alakir does most of those things for you. But then the other one, you can also still have, we have one copy of Vicious Scalehide in this too,
yep,
for the lifesteal.
Yep.
And I mean, that also synergizes well with Flame Tongue Totem anyway, so.
For sure. All right. Well,
but yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
It's a solid deck, and there's a whole lot of different variants on it, but we will put in the one that Kevin's using. We're pretty close to it, and you'll be able to look at that in the show notes. As far as what I'm playing, once again, I've decided to not go off of Hearthpwn and just build something on my own. And if it resembles something on Hearthpwn, that's great. If not, whatever. I'm in that kind of mood right now, Kevin, where I feel like I want to be annoying. And this isn't a clue into Giggling Inventor. I'm not running Giggling Inventor in this deck that I'm about to talk about. Although, if Giggling Inventor were 5 mana, it would have a place in this deck. At 7 mana, not so much. And I call this deck Taunt Lich Jaina. So what Taunt Lich Jaina is a deck which is heavy on minions. So it's mostly a minion mage deck. That means I'm taking advantage of things like Book of Spectres to draw three cards. You discard any spells drawn, but for 2 mana, most often than not, you're getting 3 cards from it. I have an Archmage Arugul in there because most of the deck is minions, so I'm going to get a copy of minion in there. And along with that, you know, I just looked at this and realized I still have my Giggling Inventors in here.
Since oh, you the nerf. Do, yes. You're still giggling,
I'm
my friend.
Still
That's
giggling,
okay.
But it's they're kind of a late play right now. But essentially what this deck is, it's a mixture of mechs and elementals running with a bit of mech and elemental synergy. And one of the key themes of the deck is all taunts all the time and life-stealing for 2 reasons. You want to have taunt to block damage, and you want to have lifesteal to recover some damage after you take it. And the key to the game is put stuff in the way of your opponent's stuff eventually until you get Frost Lich Jaina on the board. And from there, you pretty much dominate once Frost Lich Jaina is out. So this thing is running things like I'm running Corpse Takers in here as well, actually. Not running any Wind Fury because the deck isn't aggressive like that. I'm just caring about the Lifesteal, the Divine Shield, and the Taunt. So running Corpse Takers, running Wax Elementals as a cheap elemental instead of Firefly, because again, I'm playing defense here instead of offense. So Wax Elementals, right. Ruby Spellstones for the elemental synergy there, Bronze Gatekeepers, the Taunt Magnetic Mechs, Nightmare Amalgams, which are mechs and elementals.
That they are.
Yep.
And a few other things, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. I've yet to see a Nightmare Amalgam in my deck get killed by a Dragon Slayer, though. also running Stonehill Defender because it's just the best value for taunt around. Especially, it's a taunt that gives you more taunt. Sometimes it gives you another Stonehill Defender. It's also running Tar Creeper. It's a taunting elemental. Tolvir Stone Shaper, elemental synergy taunt. Rusty Recycler, which is a mech taunt with lifesteal. Servant of Kalamos, elemental synergy. Ziliax, of course, because just the synergy for Corpse Taker with your lifesteal, divine shield, and taunt. And there's a few different targets that you can attach to. And yep, I still have Giggling Inventors in here. I thought I changed those out, but this version has them in. So even at 7 mana, I would debate probably taking those out and putting something else in instead that's a little more bang for your buck. But hey, even at 7 mana, just throwing some things out there to buy some time till you get Frost Lich Jaina can't necessarily be a terrible thing. And
you wonder if you could still run it. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, you probably could.
Like I said, this is a very defensive deck. The game, this deck will not win early. The purpose of the deck is to just throw bodies in the way of stuff and outlast your opponent until you get Jaina out. And the big drops in the deck are Lich King and Jaina. That's all it there is to it. It's a really simple deck. It's the kind of deck that I feel it doesn't take a lot of mental bandwidth. It pretty much plays by itself. You kind of, seeing what you have on the board and what you have in your hand, there's not a whole lot of decisions to be made. And while some people may think, well, that's not a fun thing or a bad thing, I like this deck because it's a very low intensive thinking kind of deck. And it's something that, like, if I'm playing on my cell phone, this is a good deck to play when you're on your cell phone, when you're not sitting behind your computer and able to be in the zone. If you're just playing very super casually and you just want to try to play some Hearthstone, maybe you have a mage quest up and you want to knock a couple mage quests out of the way. I feel like this is one way to go about doing it without getting really intense with it.
The secret to playing on your cell phone successfully is to only do it. I only play on my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
I've played probably 5 computer games of Hearthstone in the last year.
I play more computer games than I do cell phone games, I think.
I just don't sit down to it on the computer. Like, if I am taking the time to sit down to a computer, I'm playing Heroes, I'm playing WoW, sure. I'm doing that kind of thing. But because I just kind of do Hearthstone on the go, and when I'm doing things like putting my son to sleep and that kind of thing.
So
it works for me.
Question for you. Does that mean that you also play Arena on a cell phone?
Oh yeah. All the time.
That's a bold move.
Yeah. You think? I think it's fine. I don't really feel like it holds me back. Like, I don't mess up a lot in terms of like actually completing my actions. I'm not the kind of guy that's misclicking stuff and, you know, dragging things to wrong targets and all that. I've got the muscle memory down to a science, I think, at this point. So I'm not worried about that. The only concern is sometimes there's like, if you're running a deck that actually requires some APM or actions per minute, if you can call it that, you know, like some of these priest decks where you're cycling through a lot of
the topsy-turvy
cards
stuff,
and spells. Yeah. And yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff like that you can't really run on the phone as well as you would a PC for sure, but almost anything else is fine in my opinion. So that's why, I mean, when people, and it's totally fine that you made the comparison, I think it's an apt one, but when people just think of the cell phone as being a casual thing and not the ability to push at all, I mean, I hit Legend on my cell phone once, so it can be done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't want to, I guess I didn't mean to discount it that way. I just,
no, I know.
I tend, my, like, when I'm playing Arena, I play 90% of my Arena matches on a computer, mostly because I'm always just paranoid and terrified of losing connection on my phone.
Oh, yeah, that could be something. That could be something.
Yeah, that's.
I think you live in a little higher population area than me, right?
Little bit. I'm still kind of in the middle of nowhere, but I mean, we have some decent internet connection, but in terms of like, there are areas in this county where the tower signal is not the strongest in the world.
If it makes you feel any better, Sprint is headquartered in Kansas City, and Sprint coverage in Kansas City is not good.
Outstanding. Like,
it's the world headquarters, and we even have the Sprint Center, which is a giant glass-looking bowl-shaped arena-type thing that concerts are at and such. And yeah, I switched to Sprint recently, and I lose connection with them way more than I did T-Mobile. So, good times.
Good. Well, let's move on a bit here because we still got quite a bit to talk about. Now, of course, by the time you're listening to this, there are just a few spare days left to participate in the Dual Class Arena. If you have not played Dual Class Arena yet, why not? You got a free ticket to play Arena. Use it. You're going to get free stuff. You're not losing anything. It's a lot of fun. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm going to say, here's my initial impression, or not initial impression, but here's my impression of Dual Class Arena this year. I went into this really excited and really jazzed to play it. I have played 7 runs, and I have only gotten 3 wins twice.
Oh, yeah. The rest of them have been 2 or 1?
Yeah. It's been rough. Last year, I did great. And I would attribute that somewhat to... And you know, I was hearing people on their podcast talk about this and just watching streamers share their experiences and stuff. And when I heard people say this, I thought, oh no, surely they're just running into bad luck. Everyone's saying it's really neutral heavy. Like, even though it's dual class, most of your deck is full of neutral minions, and there isn't too much in the way of actually class cards. It just feels like the pick rate for neutrals is higher when you're picking them, so you have fewer things from the classes, so that class combo craziness that we saw and experienced last year isn't as prevalent this year. And sure enough, it's felt like that. And I feel like I went in with an expectation that Arena was going to play out and you'd prepare for strategy one way. And my mojo was thrown off and I never got my mojo back. I'm not saying dual class Arena was a failure, but it wasn't my thing this year. I wouldn't say I had a bad time, but I didn't have a great time. Kind of neutral.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because your deck is kind of neutral as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But no, yeah, I'm kind of actually with you on that one. It's been a little less exciting this time only because last year there were a lot of class combos that were just totally broken that would just, honestly, like net people 12 win runs that had no business doing so. I'm thinking about Rogue had a lot of ways to discount other class cards. And then there's still the Obsidian Shard weapon. But yeah, Ethereal Peddler was in there and a few others that did it. And so, you know, it's you can't quite build that kind of deck. Rogue is still really good, though, by the way. But yeah, so there's I honestly, and it may be out there. Maybe I just haven't done enough research to encounter it. I'm certain there are some just totally crazy combos, but it feels like you have to work to get those combos, and you have to kind of get lucky in the draft too. Like if you knew that, oh, this exact interaction, let's think Blood Bloom, which makes it to where your spells cost health, and Unstable. What am I trying to say? Not UI, right?
Unstable Evolution?
No.
Or
the Druid. Oh, card.
Unstable Infestation.
Oh, Ultimate Infestation. I got us on the unstable train.
Ultimate Infestation. We found it.
Actually, yeah. You know, honestly, probably I'm starting to repress the name of that card. Like my brain is actually boxing that off in a little corner in my head. I can totally
see
that.
Do you think you have some PTSD there from being hit by UI way too many times?
Very possible, yeah. But anyway, the point is, like, you could Blood Bloom into that and then just get one off super early game. Sure. But again, to get that, you have to obviously not only be running Warlock and Druid, but you have to be able to get those cards in your draft, in your hand at the same time. Like, you're almost asking too much. So I don't see a lot of really crazy stuff when I'm doing this. In a way, that's okay. You know, I mean, it ends up playing out a lot like just a regular Arena run for the most part. The only difference is that you can't play around anything. Like, you never really know what they're going to have next. So you kind of have to think about just like, you know, if you're trying to get a feel of, okay, what could they possibly do on the next turn? You just have to apply it generally. You have to be like, okay, well, what would happen if they just took my whole board away with something like Volcano or something like that? And then kind of plan accordingly there. So, and I think that's what makes it a little hard for me, because that's a step that I'm still not great at, is getting reads and trying to plan ahead like that, specifically with Arena. In Constructed, you know, if you know the decks in the meta well enough, unless they throw you a curveball or some sort of tech card, you can kind of think through, all right, well, here's the turn where they hero power and do blah, 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 right? But yeah, in Arena, I've just never been great at that, honestly. It's something I'm really working at. But honestly, now is not the time to work at that, because
right,
you just don't know what you're going to run into. And again, that's fun to a degree, like in one respect. But another, it does make it harder. And yeah, I'm in the same boat. I had a 5-win run, felt good about that. But everything else has been 1, 2, 3, et cetera. So, but I mean, it's not been fun. I have also gotten a little tired of it too. Like last year, this was all I did in this time block.
Right.
And I kind of expected I'd do that again. But no, I mean... As we move into
We have more fun when we win.
That's true. And this is the thing. I'm winning with Even Shaman, so I'm having some fun over there. So, you know, I've found that I'm balancing the two a little bit more than I thought I would. But it tugs at me a little bit in the sense that I still know that it's going to be gone next Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I don't have a ton of time to play between now and then anyway, because I'm kind of prepping for BlizzCon and I'll be packing and doing all this like house cleaning so that I don't leave a complete, you know, not that my house is a complete pigsty, but you get the idea. I want to leave it in good shape for my wife and kid.
I'm right with you there. That's me on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get it. But, so anyway, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it is what it is, and I'm glad they brought it back this year. I hope that everyone also took the moment to actually be in the middle of an arena run before this thing kicked off, so you got a second free ticket. By the way, when this thing ends, probably the same deal. It's going to go back and reset, so as you get close to Halloween, if you're in the middle of a run, if you stop at two losses, unless you feel so confident that you can get another win, or also... If you'd run that risk, if you'd also know, okay, yeah, I could justify another run if I had to, then you're fine too. But
yeah,
that's a good tip going into that, or really any major overhaul of the arena, I'd say.
Yep. And I guess one of my early hopes from BlizzCon is that we might hear more about new arena experiences that are coming on. Like, I want to hear something about like a Taverns of Time thing, not necessarily the return to Taverns of Time, but I want to hear about other arena changes or activities that they're going to have up in the coming months. It'd be great.
Maybe they'll have us vote on them.
I don't think so, simply because there is no Hearthstone Q&A to provide time to do that.
Oh, true. Yeah. Good point. Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. Maybe they'll do the voting like as an online only thing after BlizzCon. That's a possibility. Or maybe they make the voting only online for people who have the virtual ticket. Who knows? We're already speculating about BlizzCon.
So we may as well just transition right into that then.
Well, okay, sure, fine. And for people wondering about the Tavern Brawl, we'll get to it. Trust me, we'll get to it. It's not a whole lot to talk about. But all right. It is interesting. BlizzCon is going to be here. As I mentioned, there is no Hearthstone Q&A. There is a Hearthstone What's Next panel, in which everyone and their brother and their sister and their cousin's former roommate is pretty sure that we're going to get the reveal of the third set for 2018 for Hearthstone. If not now, then when?
Right.
And aside from that, though, no one really knows what's going to be happening in terms of announcements or expectations, especially because just, of course, now it's like, what, 5 or 6 weeks ago, but not that long ago, we got that whole big blog post telling us about like what they were working with and what's in development. And we got the thing with new player ranks and stuff. That's something else we're going to talk about in a second. But all we know for sure, at least 99% sure, is new set reveal. So starting off with that, let's try to predict this thing terribly here. Kevin, what do you think the theme or the name of this final set's going to be? We have one clue, but just one.
Oh, beyond the image that we had initially, or was there another clue?
Well, the image thing is the only clue I'm talking about when we got...
So based on that, again, at the beginning of the year, they released an image that included kind of a little hint at the theming of each of these expansions. And when you go back and look at it, the Witchwood image kind of checks out. Like, we had no idea what was going on with that at first, of course. Mm-hmm. But then it was fairly easy to guess that at least the second one was set in Netherstorm, because so each of these are a little kind of circular center piece that has a gem in it. And then there's also some extra stuff around the outside, for lack of a better word. And so it was pretty clear that honestly looked like the tubes, I guess, of arcane energy between the different the domes in the Netherstorm, if you're familiar with the Burning Crusade zone. But so that one was pretty easy to pick. This next one is not as much, but I've been looking it over, and I think I have at least a halfway decent guess on this one. If not, maybe I've bragged elsewhere that I'm just going to guess this one correctly. So, don't know if I'm going to, but my best shot is something to do with the Zandalari trolls. It's going on right now in World of Warcraft. So when you look at the image, the color scheme is what I'm talking about. The center gem is this kind of teal sort of color. And then there's that kind of red, sort of like ruddy red color stone around it. That part I can't explain as much, the stone. It doesn't exactly scream like the color scheme of the Great Seal or anything. But around that is, again, sort of more tan colorations, as well as down below, there's a few markings that make it look kind of like almost like a totem in a sense. But definitely some sort of like tribal marking is how I interpret those like notches in the bottom of the band, if you can call it that. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, like, I took a look at that. If you go and take a look at the Zandalari Troll Heritage Armor that isn't out yet because they're not out yet. If you look at it, their skin tones against the same kind of like color scheme of these like brassy, bronzy colors on the armor, honestly, looks pretty close to me. And so when I had this idea in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, well, wait. Usually when Hearthstone's pulling content from World of Warcraft, they're doing it in the past somehow. You know, they're throwing back to Naxxramas, or they're going all the way back to Un'Goro at times in which the game itself, World of Warcraft, isn't really tracking with that content. But then it hit me. There was another point in Hearthstone's history in which there was a bit of crossover here, and that was One Night in Karazhan released roughly within a couple months' time of the remake of Karazhan in Legion.
That's true.
And at that time, it was really cool because when the Legion Karazhan came out shortly after One Night in Karazhan, the instance actually was written in with a couple of Hearthstone references. You had some ghosts that were casting like Firelands Portal and Purify and some of these other things. And it was just kind of like, oh, I see what you did there. and I could see them doing that too, because in the World of Warcraft space, for sure, we're going to learn almost everything we need to know probably about the upcoming Siege of Zul'Azar raid. And if that has some sort of crossover with the Hearthstone content and they kind of share back and forth a little bit of the theming, I could really see that working. And honestly, people have been wanting a troll expansion for some time too.
They have?
I've heard this. Yeah. I don't know.
I haven't.
Oh, really?
I may just be, honestly, I may be listening to the wrong people,
though. Okay, yeah, I guess. Maybe the people I'm listening to are just trolling me. anyway, yeah, speaking of dad jokes. So that's kind of where I'm at as far as theming. Now, as to like the title or, you know, because there's always the chance that they're going to go the wacky route too.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of would be, so there's a dive bar right next to the Great Seal in Zul'Dazar. So maybe it's like set there and it's a bunch of different characters coming to the dive bar and doing whatever. Obviously, if it is Zandalari themed, it would be heavy on the Loa. So we'd have like Razan and some of the others, the, you know, Gonk. Gonk's probably my favorite just by name. And I also, so I thought about that too. I was like, okay, if they come out with this set now and there's dinosaurs in it, which essentially a lot of these Loa are, and we'd still be in a rotation, at least for a short while, with Un'Goro, which has a lot of dinosaurs. And I was like, would they really release that many dinosaurs back to back? And then I kind of put myself in some of those initial meetings on the Team 5, where they sit down and talk about theming and all that. And I could totally see someone being like, do we really want more dinosaurs in the game this early? And then someone else in the room being like, well, hell yes, you know? So it's possible. I don't know. But what do you think? Am I totally off the rocker here?
I like how detailed you are. I like that you have a sound explanation. I don't think that's what we're getting.
Ah, yes. Fair enough.
My idea is far more brief and just kind of a guess, and also going by some hunches and feelings and stuff like that. When I look at that symbol, it gives me a very aquatic vibe.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think that we're going to be going on some sort of ocean adventure. Like the reddish around there, it made me think of, well, let's see, could that be like some coral or something like that?
Ooh, maybe.
Something like a coral structure, a reef structure. I couldn't really explain the runes, but I'm leaning toward an aquatic adventure of sorts. And I want to say, just as Boomsday put a lot of focus on mechs, and every class got a couple of mechs and stuff like that, and mechs really got their place to shine, Kevin, believe it or not, there is a minion type that hasn't gotten a lot of love recently.
An aquatic minion type of sorts, you mean?
Well, sort of. I'm not talking about Murlocs.
Oh, really? I thought for sure you were talking about Murlocs.
No, I'm talking about the rulers of the seas themselves. I'm talking about pirates, Kevin. Now, a year ago, we had Merrin the Fox teased as a card preview for Kobolds and Catacombs. Everyone saw Merrin the Fox and they thought, oh my gosh, pirate expansion, pirate expansion. And Merrin the Fox ended up being not a pirate, not at all.
Right.
And it threw everyone off. So it has me thinking, these guys are developing Hearthstone 2 to 3 sets in advance. They have said as much. Could the pirate expansion thing at BlizzCon then keyed them off to think, well, maybe a pirate expansion is a good idea? Right now, the only classes that really have pirates, there are two pirates for, and I'm talking wild here, there are two pirates for warrior, and there's a good number of pirates for rogue. But what if you had some pirate priests or some mages that were magical mage pirates? What if every class had, you know, one or two pirates to add to the mix then, and you kind of did a heavy pirate theme and tried to build out the pirate theme some, mostly to just kind of give the set some flavor and to give pirate decks in the wild format some fun to play with as well. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Of course, because it's a pirate thing and it's aquatic and stuff like that, that obviously opens up the opportunity for some new Murloc cards to come in, but I don't think Murlocs would be a dominant theme. So I'm thinking pirates. I'm going to go one step further, Kevin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while I don't think Hearthstone will introduce this as a new minion type, I think we need to have pirates versus ninjas.
Oh, yes. That just needs to happen at some point anyway. And I don't think that they would actually come out with a pirate set that doesn't also have a good ninja or two. So, I mean, if you go all the way back to the, Deviant Savory Delight from Vanilla WoW, that was a food that you could turn into either a pirate or a ninja. And they would kind of argue and squabble. So there's a precedent.
Yeah. So I don't have an idea for the name, but I'm thinking pirate expansion, probably pirates versus ninjas, add some Murlocs into the mix, have some fun on the high seas. We'll call it High Sea Hijinks.
There you go.
As a placeholder name.
Sounds good. Although it makes me think of High Sea, the like vitamin C fruit drink. But that's okay. That's okay. I like that stuff.
All right. So every set needs to have something that's going to make it feel special. And I mean, having a lot of pirates is one thing, but that having a lot of mechs isn't necessarily what makes Boomsday special. The quirky thing about Boomsday was it had stuff like Magnetic, and it had these legendary scientists and such. For your troll set, Kevin, do you have any inkling of like what would make the troll set special? Like what kind of weird mechanic or a card could they do in there? Maybe something with Loa?
I was absolutely going to say Loa. So I picture it as being, because when you go through, if you haven't played on the Horde side to get through a lot of the Zul'Dazar campaign, you start off by learning about their culture and how they worship the Loa and everything. And pretty early on in the sequence there, I got to think I was still 110 at this point. You choose your Loa, kind of like your patron Loa, and you're choosing between, I'm blanking the name. There's Gonk and then there's the Pterodactyl. Forgive me. Didn't have a lot of sleep last night. but anyway, so you choose the Loa and then you get like a couple different buffs, or like with Gonk in my case, I chose him. And then there's a couple, totems scattered throughout Zul'Dazar that if you run over them, you get faster movement speed and that kind of thing. So that's what got me to think about aura effects, or like choosing your Loa ahead of time, and then having some sort of permanent effect or at least periodic effect that comes up because you made that choice. They've experimented with this in Brawls in years past. I think it's been some time since we've seen one of the ones that was actually playing around with the concept of aura effects. I'm totally blanking on which one. They were pretty small effects, but you could choose them at the beginning of the game. Are you remember what I'm talking about here? Where like you could make it to where you always heal for one on everything and stuff like that.
Yeah, not at the time. I know what you're saying, but I can't. Yeah.
I'd have to go back and dig. If anyone catches on to the one I'm talking about, Again, it was probably a couple of years ago by now. Write us in because I need to go back and check this thing out. But so I do know they've played with it in the past in Brawl form. They can do anything they want with it. And you see it in other card games too. Like Magic has similar things, right?
Enchantments and auras.
And even Pokemon has some certain things that like you could set out and changes like the conditions of the field that you're playing on, right? So I think that could be done here. And so maybe it's like you get an aura and then they're a really high cost card that doesn't really do much. Kind of in the same vein as like Baku and Greymane. Honestly, in a way, those have aura effects in that they themselves don't do much, but they actually change the way the game flows.
Some legendary weapons kind of have aura effects too. I mean, it basically we're talking about like passive effects that are attached to something that is not necessarily the easiest thing to get rid of.
But the cool thing is if you did an aura effect in Hearthstone, it would probably take a lot of animation time to pull this off, but you could have it change the battlefield itself. So like, say you're doing some sort of a frost aura, I'm not sure. You could have all the individual maps within Hearthstone get retooled with snow or get kind of frozen or something like that. So there's
that's
so much
a lot of artwork.
Yeah, I know. Probably too much work for what it's worth, when maybe you could just make it glow a little bit or something like that. But I could maybe see that with a Loa theme. But how about for yours? What's is a pirate mechanic that honestly we haven't seen yet? Because if you come back and say, oh, well, it buffs people's weapons and pirates buff other pirates, and if you throw an idea at me like, oh, there should be a 1/1 that has charge that comes out anytime you play pirates, I'm just gonna hang up. So what you got here for me, Brian?
So one thing I want to comment about your Loa things, I got two comments to make.
Oh, sure.
One is I feel like Loas could be something that only a select number of classes would have. Like I could see it being a shaman and druid thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then throw in a paladin Loa for that big dinosaur one, Razan or whatever. And rogues would get the trash Loa because heck.
Oh, yes. The best one.
Yeah, but I think you'd limit the Loa to maybe those classes and give another mechanic.
Warlock could get that spider that what's-her-face kills.
Yeah, the I forget the name, but I know what you're talking about.
She absorbs its power, and then she goes into Atal Dazar and is the final boss there. Priestess something something. Yeah.
Also, you realize that by predicting a troll set and talking about Loa as a theme, you have created the title for this show, which is Loa Expectations.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I like that. And that's sadly a great way to describe how Blizzard has been talking about this BlizzCon. It's like, well, you guys, you're really expecting a lot out of Diablo, but we need you to lower your expectations.
You're not getting an Overwatch map, so...
So lower those expectations. Oh man, yeah, we're onto something here. That's good. Yeah,
so episode titles figured out. So that's great. Yep. Less work for me. Mm-hmm. Okay, so with a pirate high seas theme thing, I feel like treasure hunting should be involved. The question is, how do you incorporate treasure hunting? We already had the discover mechanic, so it could be like something similar to the discover mechanic. I don't know how you'd incorporate treasure hunting in, but I feel like treasure hunting should be a part of it somehow. I just don't know how that translates.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Marin the Fox is a great example of how you could do a treasure theme thing, which again, when he was announced, made us think even more that it was a pirate set, because it's all about
treasure
chest.
He could have pirate put on him. He could have a pirate tag put on him, and he'd be a great fit for the set. I could see there being a card called like treasure map, and when you draw the treasure map, it's kind of like a random quest. It would be a quest with requirements that any deck should be capable of completing, but you still have to work for it. And like, if you complete the map, then you get the treasure.
Oh, like kill five minions or something. And
That's something that's not like too hard to do. But I mean, that's how you can incorporate a treasure map into the thing.
I really like that, because then the other player, if they knew what the quest was, they could be playing around it. You know, I mean, if the quest is to clear five minions and you're playing a kind of slower deck, you might just not throw out a lot of minions for a while for them to clear, you know, and there could be this really good, like, push and pull. And I don't know, that's a cool idea.
I could think of a mechanic where you have like pirate ships, and I mean, ships are basically just minions, but what makes the ships special is that ships have to be manned. So the ships would have power and toughness, or the ship's power and toughness would be determined by the pirates that you have on the board. So the pirates have their own power, their own damage and health and stuff like that. But the more pirates you have, when you put a ship into play, the stronger the ship is. And when you lose pirates, the ship becomes weaker because an unmanned ship isn't going to be able to do much.
That's true. Yeah.
So there's my mechanic. There you go. Pirate ships. Minions that are tied to the pirate mechanic, and the ships are stronger and do different abilities and stuff based on what pirates you have in play.
I like it. They could throw a little cheeky side reference to the Lost Vikings and have like a longboat type thing where you load up multiple minions onto the ship and it has some extra effect and all these things.
You could have a pirate that you could have a cannoneer pirate, and its ability could mean your pirate ship deals your pirate ship gets like the demolisher ability, where at the beginning of your turn it does 2 damage to a random
thing. Or abilities from the cannoneer in the Witchwood.
That would work too. So yeah, that's my rough theme for it, just thinking off the top of my head. I'm hoping that we see pirates get a bit more love. But again, one thing I do want to emphasize is if we have a pirate set, I feel all classes should have access to pirates. I want to see mage pirates. I want to see druid pirates, even though that may sound entirely wacky. This is Hearthstone. It's a place to go wacky. Let's have priest pirates. I don't know how those would work, but I'd love to see it.
There's, you know, I mean, historically, there's usually at least some sort of chaplain or priest on the pirate ship, right? So,
sure,
you know,
Tide Sages.
Oh yeah, there you go. Tide Sages would be really cool.
Yeah,
actually, that's some cool theming right there too. When you first brought up the nautical idea, I was thinking under the sea type stuff, like Naga. Doing like
I think that's too easy.
You think so? Okay, maybe.
I think the Naga thing. I feel like the Naga thing is too easy.
Naga are coming to WoW as well. It's definitely going to be an 8.2 thing with the Azara stuff and all that. So yeah. By the way, I looked it up just because why not? The other Loa instead of Gonk was Paku. That's the
there we go.
That's the pterodactyl, and we forgot about probably the most important Loa ever, the Loa of Death, Wansamdi, and that's your warlock one.
No,
or priest.
I would say priest
for all the resurrection stuff.
Yeah. I'm feeling the kind of the resurrection, the dark priest stuff, the undead stuff. You could do a priest Loa for that. I think the spider being the warlock Loa is the way to go for sure.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right.
All right. Well, okay. I guess I can't believe how much time we've already spent talking about this, but one last question I want to ask you as far as predictions and stuff. We know that we're going to get the set. Do either of us feel that we're going to get anything announced outside of the set? Like, hey, we are adding this feature to the game, or we are adding this game mode. Do you think we're going to get anything like that whatsoever, Kevin?
Truthfully, no. But if I'm dreaming, and I am, I'm being optimistic here for sure. I definitely think that there's a chance for it, or at least like for the conversation to start about it. So like in the What's Next panel, I could see, I mean, obviously they'd cover the set and new mechanics and everything, but they could then dive into really honestly a bunch of different things. I'd honestly like to see, we covered Tavern Brawls pretty extensively on this podcast. I'd like to see even more stuff in that space, as well as, for the actual innkeeper, when you're actually going to a fireside gathering. We've seen things in the past like that, that Arthas raid where everyone was fighting against the Lich King. There's a lot they could do in the PvE space that they could announce at something like that. So that could be cool. Obviously, they're going to stay off the subject of tournament mode as much as possible. I would be surprised to hear them mention anything related to that. But there's potential for other stuff. And honestly, so I've said in the past as well that, you know, they'd said that tournament mode was shelved in part because they wanted to work on a more robust social feature system, such as maybe clans, maybe other ways to like find friends, group up, that kind of thing. We could maybe see some inklings of that kind of thing, as well as anything from other like little quality of life features, like an overhaul of the you know, spectator system. Replays would be really cool. I would love to see them do something like where they implement a best of three onto the ladder, kind of like we talked about. So it's stuff like that that we honestly could see. But as far as like a totally new mode or anything, I'd be really surprised at that. But what do you think?
So here are three things that I'm hoping, wishing, and kind of expecting. And if any one of the three come true, I will be happy.
Okay.
Spectator mode needs an overhaul. It needs improvements. Everyone knows it. And you already brought it up. I think spectator mode needs a lot of changes and extra support. It's been around for a while, and it just needs to be in a better place, in my opinion. That's kind of a minor thing to me, though. Speaking from a casual point of view, I feel that in the solo adventure section, for practice mode, the basic decks are cool and fine. It's a great place for new players to try their decks against like the very basic of decks. I would like the expert decks to essentially be the deck recipe versions of whatever the current deck recipe is, so that you play against a deck that has a much stronger theme with current cards, that has an actual direction and purpose besides, oh, here are some of the basic cards from the thing. It's like, if you're going to call it an expert deck, make it feel like it's an expert deck.
Right.
So that's one thing I want to see as far as casual play goes. And then in terms of the solo adventure for this expansion, and as far as game modes go, I want to see them take another dive into dungeon runs, but the twist should be, I want a dungeon run where I have some degree of control over my initial deck. We get 10 cards at the start. We get 10 cards at the start of Dungeon Run and Monster Hunt. I want to be able to set those 10 cards. Now, the bosses could still be random. Your final boss could still be very random. But if you could go in with a core group of 10 cards selected from your deck, however you want to pick them, and then that gives you more flexibility and replayability, not only in having the deck start the way you want to start it. You don't end up having to deal with certain trash cards that are like worthless in the deck later on. But then you can also build a deck in a way that makes you think, okay, if I run into the option of this treasure or that treasure with this core deck that I'm building, I want to go this way instead of that way. I think having control over that initial 10 card deck would be the refreshing twist for the Monster Hunt Dungeon Run format that's needed.
Yeah, I like it. Let me throw you a curveball. Let's do that and sideboarding. So you end up building a deck that perhaps you can only run 30 cards, but you have 40, and you can pull them out and put them in based on what boss you're coming up against.
Are you talking just for the solo adventure?
Yeah, sure. As an experiment, so then Blizzard falls in love with the idea and puts it in an arena or something.
Yeah, as far as sideboarding goes, like, quick aside, I would love to see sideboarding against other players, but before I see it against other players, I want to have conquest and formats and bans.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, good point.
I want bans before I want sideboards. But if we're talking just PvE content, then yeah, it sounds like a cool idea.
Could just be another twist, is all I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But I like yours, too. No, for sure. I mean, more control just makes it feel like we have even more power to succeed. You know, we're not relying
things
on
can still.
Yeah,
things can still get random and crazy. But having a good cornerstone of a deck to start with, I think could do a lot for people just being interested in playing it over and over again, because you could build your starting deck any way you want it and then just see where the wind takes you.
So there you go. So the are you thinking then that the PvE content's going to be another jab at Dungeon Run one way or the other?
I don't think it's going to be puzzles. I mean, people like puzzles, but I don't think it's going to be puzzles.
Could be something totally new, though.
It could be something totally new, but I really think that it's going to be a Dungeon Run variant, or it's going to be, or this next set may simply be an adventure set where it kind of, where the content mimics, say, Knights of the Frozen Throne, where there's a strong story to it and you're going up against planned bosses and stuff.
Yeah, there could be that. The only other wild idea I had was to have an entire, not exactly solo, but PvE content that's all the co-ops. You know, the brawls that we've seen where it's 2-on-1 against a boss that swaps sides and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That could be cool. Like an entire co-op adventure. You have to partner with someone, but it's awesome. And the bosses are really well thought out and the decks are really well thought out. Or maybe even you can craft your own decks to like help each other out with healing and all those types of things. I could see that being kind of cool, too.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that. It makes for some interesting deck builds. I'd definitely be on board for that. I think I'd want to queue for that with someone I know, though. I wouldn't want to be randomly paired.
You'd queue with someone randomly. They'd be trying to kill you or something. You'd be sitting there what's happening? But yeah, I mean, what a great way, though, and if something like that comes out, to introduce a friend to the game. Honestly, I've been playing a little bit lately with one of my coworkers, a buddy of mine as well, and he took a couple years off the game but is coming back. And we've actually been getting some good mileage out of the, you know, how you can test each other's decks. He's been hopping on and trying out a bunch of my decks that I have on my account. So that's been pretty fun just for like playing a game over lunch at work. And so that would be a setting in which he and I could sit down and just be like, hey, let's see if we can crush out some of these bosses. And then like he's catching up, learning some of the cards that he's missed, and we're just kind of hanging out. Like I could see that being pretty fun.
It definitely could work out. I'm hoping we get more than a set reveal, but I'm keeping my expectations low while Kevin's keeping his expectations lower.
Lower. Yes, there you go. Well, there's no Q&A. That's the concern, yet again, to bring up. There's no chance for people to go up and complain about tournament mode, which is probably good, honestly. Like, I feel like if there was a Q&A, that's what they'd have.
They don't have a Q&A. They just don't want to deal with the fires that they'd have to put out.
Yeah, maybe. And honestly, like, I don't know if you're getting the same sense, Brian, but across a lot of the games at Blizzard this year, there's some fires, man. Like, I'm optimistic about all of the games, and I'm not really feeling the flames myself because I'm just having fun playing all these different games. But I can't think of one of their titles right now where there's not something you could sit back and be like, but the Azerite armor system, or personal base matchmaking rating in Heroes, or there's the lack of tournament mode in Hearthstone. Like, I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer. I'm super psyched for BlizzCon, but there is something in each of the games that people are not happy about right now.
I mean, I'm not going to say people are wrong with that, but I think that the air of negativity about a good number of Blizzard's games right now is kind of silly.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's partially, I mean, there's these games are never perfect. There's always flaws with them. People always put them out. And things always seem the darkest before the dawn, you might say. With a lot of these franchises, people always seem to be angry or irritated or annoyed about one aspect of the game. Then BlizzCon happens and suddenly everything's great.
Yeah, BlizzCon could be that dawn you're talking about, honestly. Yeah. Like, they could go in there and just address a lot of these things and just totally wow us with all this new stuff. And I do expect that, too, to a great degree. So, no, I'm going in optimistic. I don't mean to make it sound like I'm not, but just kind of stirring up a little bit of what the communities are kind of poking at right now. But I think you're right. I think we're on the verge of something great in all of these IPs.
For sure. Let's wrap things up the way we usually start things out, and let's talk about the Brawl Breakdown.
Brawl!
All right, so this week's Tavern Brawl is a returning brawl where you fight the Headless Horseman. We haven't talked about this one before because Hearth Casual didn't exist then, but it is a repeat brawl, so if you were around when Hallow's End was around last year, you might be familiar with the brawl. Basically, you fight against the Headless Horseman. He has some special exclusive cards to his deck, like Squashlings that can attack you and blow everything up, larger Squashlings, which make small Squashlings, and He's a tough hombre. Not only does he have 30 life, but when you take him down to lethal damage, his head pops off, just like in the encounter in WoW, which is great. And then have to defeat the head. And the head can't be targeted by spells or effects, and it has 35 health and 2 attack. That's the gist of it for what the enemy does. On your end, you start out on turn 1 being a Stormwind investigator with a whole bunch of Stormwind champions, and you wonder, how the heck does this work? And then when you take your first turn, you get the option of 3 costumes. And the costumes are a witch, a cat, and a pirate. Kevin, which costume did you choose to beat this encounter, if you've beaten it yet?
So, first of all, I want to give you a tip about the mulligan phase with the Stormwind champions. Yes. It is best practice to always mulligan all of them away, just so that you see another round of Stormwind champions come back. I don't know why, but for me, it's just the feel of cycling through those cards just gets my blood pumping for the match, you know? So I recommend that as a mulligan strategy. But no, seriously, I have not beaten it yet. Ooh. I haven't gotten to play it too much. I've tried all the classes and gotten annihilated on all of them. So I am a fan of the cat, though. And the cat idea, so we can kind of break down these different ones a little bit as we go here. Mm-hmm. But basically, the cat is where whenever a non-boss enemy survives damage of any kind, even little pings and that sort of thing, you summon a 1/1 cat. And so I've found some kind of cool stuff with this. Obviously, like, you can just play around with it to get a lot of tokens out of the deal, these little 1/1 cats. But there's the Tundra Rhino, Brian. Have you played with this yet?
I have.
It's the best. It truly is the best.
It's a Gatling gun.
Yeah, Gatling gun of cats, which is just a great image. Like, if you're thinking of that in your head, it's glorious. And in fact, I'm surprised that isn't a Hearthstone card of some kind by now. but yeah, no, it's seriously, like, because you put the Tundra Rhino down, if anything survives damage enough to where you can summon the 1/1 cat, they all have charge. So you just keep charging them into stuff. And as they damage down other minions that you're killing, they're summoning more cats and vice versa, et cetera, et cetera. You keep going. And you're right, it's a Gatling gun of cats. And that's going to be a really tempting episode title, but that's beside the point. but it's like a hard removal of just sending a swarm of cats at something. So that's really cool. And there's just a lot more to the deck there that you can kind of explore and play around with. So I was a fan of the cat. I like the witch too. My least favorite is the pirate. So, and I mean no offense to your expansion idea, because I do like pirates, but I don't like these pirates. I don't know why. Just the deck doesn't work out that great for me. The couple games I've tried, the pirate no go. Like, my least successful run on it for sure. Because I mean, there's some synergies you can get. Like, it has ship's cannon, which counts as a pirate, because the pirate idea is that all of your minions are pirates. So, I mean, you can put out a ship's cannon, throw out a bunch of pirates that have pirate synergies. Some cards that have pirate synergy when they ordinarily aren't pirates are super helpful too, but I just couldn't get it to work. I don't know. And for me, I think the problem I'm having with this brawl in particular is just that you don't really have a hero power. Like, your hero power is just a slot kind of explaining your costume and what it does. It's not that you have an action. So you're really never in a moment where you can easily fill in the last 2 mana that you're floating. So I find myself floating 1 or 2 mana a bunch, and it ends up being a little clunky. Specifically, the witch can be a little clunky for me. That's where
the witch is super clunky.
Yeah. If you have enough mana, your spells cost double and cast a second copy. So cool, sure. I had wild growth in a run, and I actually saved it for turn 4, at which point it got 2 off, and it was kind of like a cheap nourish. So that's nice. But not really. I don't know. Like, I had spent so much time building that up that the Headless Horseman was just building up a bunch of other things and going from there. So yeah, totally haven't won it yet. And I like it. Like, I like the theming. I love the fact that the head comes back and some of the other themed cards that he has, like the Sinister Squashling and all these other things. But, but it is not easy. I'll admit that.
So I think the witch is terrible.
Okay.
I think the cat's underpowered.
Underpowered?
Yep.
You're going all pirates?
I won with pirates.
Okay, you got to sell me on these pirates.
So
again, second time this episode, you got to sell me on these pirates.
I do believe that getting the right draw is important to win with pirates. You need to have ship's cannon in your opening hand. If you do not get ship's cannon in your opening hand, and after your mulligan, you click on the gear and you hit restart and you start over and you make sure you have ship's cannon in your opening hand, because having ship's cannon on turn two and just having an aggressive start and also helping control the board is super important to push into phase two. So ship's cannon in your starting hand, absolutely important. From there, if you play ship's cannon on turn two, you're going to get Patches a Pirate out of your deck. And while he doesn't have charge, your ship's cannon is going to get value out of that. That's one reason why it's important. From there, you're just playing stuff on the board. If you get a weapon, go face with the weapon. You should never attack the enemy minions with a weapon. And I only say that because you have to get through 65 health of stuff.
It's a fair point.
You can't afford to take damage because this is going to be a relatively drawn out fight. And once he goes into phase two, his damage output is fairly increased in terms of, like, he shoots fireballs at your guys. He has some bigger stuff that he puts out. You just really can't afford to be using the weapon to take out other minions unless you absolutely have to use the weapon to go face. With that in mind, there are synergy cards in your deck, pirate synergy cards, which will, like, upgrade, which buffs your weapon attack and toughness and number of uses. There's that one pirate where if you have a pirate in play, which means if you have any minion in play, your weapon gets +1/+1. You have the legendary goblin that gives all your weapons +1/+1. So the trick is to basically control the board with ship's cannons, build up your weapon to get it strong, and hold on to your cookie. And by that,
oh yes,
I mean, in your opening hand, you will always get Captain Cookie. Cookie is a exclusive card who has extra power and toughness based on the number of pirates you have played so far this game. So every time you play a pirate, which means anytime you play a minion, since all your minions are pirates, Cookie gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Once you go into phase two, Cookie is the minion you're counting on to finish the job and attack the Headless Horseman and take him out. A word of caution on that, though. Headless Horseman does have Shadow Word Death. So that means you want to try to bait out Shadow Word Death before you play Cookie.
Doesn't he also have a card called Fear, which clears a lot of your minions, too? What's the deal on Fear?
Fear kills everything with a power of 4 or less, so you don't want to go too wide on your board. But
Cookie should be fine by then.
Yeah. Try to bait out a Shadow Word Death. Unless you want to take the gamble. Like, if you think that you can kill him in two turns and you want to take the gamble that he doesn't have Shadow Word Death, that he hasn't drawn it yet, then go ahead, play for it, and it's kind of a coin flip. If he has Shadow Word Death, then you lose. If he doesn't have Shadow Word Death, then you're probably going to win. I won because he didn't have Shadow Word Death. I played again with Pirates and had harder time because he did have Shadow Word Death. So I do think that Pirates is probably the easiest to win with, but it's also kind of RNG based on, does Horseman draw Shadow Word Death for Cookie? If he does, you lose. If he doesn't, you win.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense to me. I'll give it another try for sure. I don't know if I would have come back to Pirates without that explanation. So now I got some stuff to work with. So I appreciate that for sure. It does remind me a little bit of old Pirate Warrior, you know?
Yeah.
Some of that weapon buffing that you're doing. A lot of those same cards were in that old deck, so it's not that old. I'm talking like, you know, Mean Streets of Gadgetzan into Un'Goro time.
Yeah, like a year ago.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Ancient times. Hey, you know, when your son is turning one next week, like mine is,
oh my gosh.
A year feels like a long time, I will say that.
You know what doesn't feel like a long time?
What?
This episode. I don't know how we're at an hour and 10 minutes already.
I don't know, but it's a BlizzCon thing. It's fine. Yeah. We can wrap it up, though. I just want to say, I got to get back in there on this brawl, and I'm just glad to see it back. It's different enough to be interesting. I wanted to shout out really quickly, though. So there's a really good mini guide write-up that this gentleman I'm following on Instagram. It's Hearth_share on Instagram. It was formerly Ben Plays Hearthstone. He's actually written this show once.
Yep.
I don't know if he's still listening or not, but if you are, shout out. Yeah, cool. Really great write-up on this. It was a couple days ago, actually just yesterday. And it's short enough that I could read it out on the podcast, but I don't want to steal his content. I want to point you there instead, because he's got some really good general tips that get way into detail about how to like handle these different phases and different stages and all that. So, if you want to try to win with the other classes, get some more additional tips, or if you're taking Brian's pirate recommendation and still having a lot of trouble, apply this knowledge to it as well and go from there. But yeah, he puts out some cool stuff on Instagram, man. Like it's one of the better follows I have on Instagram, next to Dad Says Jokes, of course, and and anti dog barking creams.
Absolutely. I did mention at the top of the show I was going to talk about starting at rank 50. I'm going to put that discussion on hold for an episode or two, simply because two things. One, I want to do we're short on time. And I want to play a little bit more with my free-to-play account and see if Kevin has some time to play starting at rank 52. Because I will say very quickly that it's been an interesting experience starting a new account and doing that ladder climb from 50 up to 25. I do have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I want to check it out too. So yeah, give me a moment for that. It's just there's been so much going on the dual class arena and such that, you know.
Sure.
And I got to hit 5, right? Maybe. Yeah. I've put pressure on me now. People are going to be tweeting at me on November 1st. So, did you do it? I'm like, no.
Yep.
Yeah.
Of course, we're all getting ready for BlizzCon 2018. Both Kevin and I will be going to Anaheim. I know, Kevin, this is your second visit. You're super excited about it. And I've heard that you may even have access to go to some places that other people aren't able to go, thanks to your ties with Lords of the Storm and all.
Potentially. I'm still waiting on some finalized stuff with that. So going with Lords of the Storm for sure. But one of the things I'm mainly excited for, of course, is the Con Before the Storm World of Podcasts Hearthstone panel.
Yes.
Which is taking place the day before, actually a week from today, week from tonight. Like even if you time out the time, it's happening a week from now, given the West Coast thing.
I'm panicking now. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry.
It's a week away. Oh, no.
Give you a heart attack. Yeah, Brian actually helps out a lot with kind of running that deal. So, no pressure, man. It'll be fine. But anyway, so that's going on. A lot of different podcasters from different shows. Cham NV hosting it for sure.
Yep.
Garrett Weinzerl's on there. A bunch of other people. Andrew, who we just had on this show.
Yeah.
Going to be hanging out yet again. And by the way, thanks again, man, for filling in. And I love that episode. It was a good time for sure.
Oh, yeah.
He brought more trolley decks than you do, man. That was good stuff. But we're all going to have trolley decks after this Zuldazar Zandalar Troll Dive Bar expansion release.
I'll keep my expectations low. You keep your expectations lower.
That's right. So, yep, looking forward to all that stuff. I had to skip last year because baby, and this year I'm able to make it. So,
nice.
Should be good.
Mm-hmm. One more thing we do want to bring up in addition to that Hearthstone panel. There is a fairly strong chance that I'm going to include that Hearthstone panel on this podcast feed. We do have permission from Con Before the Storm to include that panel on our feed. So, I will likely do so. So, you can just tune into this feed. It will come out likely on this feed a couple of days after BlizzCon once I'm back home. If you want to listen to it sooner, you can check the World of Podcast feed on iTunes or Google, and I think it'll be on Spotify soon. Also, one more thing. On Tuesday, so October 30th, do check out the Realm Maintenance podcast. That is one of the other podcasts I do, but that is a big huge pre-BlizzCon show. There is no Hearthstone talk on it because we kind of ran out of time to talk about Hearthstone.
Honestly. we knew we were going to talk about it here.
Yeah, for those of you listening to this because you were referred from the Realm Maintenance podcast, welcome. but yeah, we talked about, Kevin was actually on that show along with a whole lot of other podcasters from the Frozen Fox Media Network. So Rolling Restart, Kevin, of course, from Hearth Casual. We had Worgen's Howl, Loot Optional podcast on there as well, and a whole lot of us just talked about predictions for BlizzCon, expectations. We talked about all the different games out there. So if you love Blizzard games in general and you would like some pre-BlizzCon content in your ears, do check out Realm Maintenance on Tuesday, October 30th. Also have a great interview there with Jeff Robinson, one of the casters for StarCraft II. You may know him as In Control. Been a big player and a big voice in the community for StarCraft for a long time. Had a great interview with him, and there might be another pretty cool interview in there as well that I haven't recorded just yet, but hope to soon. And so yeah, do check that out. And if you like what you hear there and you like what you hear here and you want to support this show and that one, you can support both of them by going to patreon.com/realmpodcast and support all the good stuff that Realm Maintenance Productions puts out. Kevin, where can people find you on the internet between now and the next time we talk?
Well, honestly, you can find me on Twitter anytime, at Multizord for sure. But we've changed a little bit around on Lords of the Storm.
So as I hear. Right.
Yeah, so we've got, you can find the Lords of the Storm Twitter at Lords of the Storm and still search for the podcast as you always do. It's live Wednesdays. It's 9 p.m. Central, which is the same time we've always run, except a slightly different channel. We've actually been picked up as for like a partnership / sponsorship / I'm not exactly sure what ship, but very exciting ship with Heroes Hearth, which is one of the main community sites for the Heroes of the Storm community. They also are the org behind actually the top NA team right now going into BlizzCon. Mm-hmm. So team to root for right there for sure. If you guys are NA fans at all, that or Tempo Storm, of course, obviously. But yeah, so really excited about that. So we're now actually going to be streaming on the Hearth Casual Twitch, same time slot again, that 9 p.m. Central, but at twitch.tv/ Heroes Hearth. That's what I'm trying to say. Did I say Hearth Casual?
I
may have.
You may have. I think we're both tired and...
yeah, it's fine. But you get it. Heroes Hearth.
Yes.
So we're super excited about that. Like, it's been something that's been in the works for quite some time, and TBK did a lot of work to help kind of, like, he's been writing for them for about a year now and mm-hmm. such, so to just kind of see it all come together, and right before BlizzCon is just pretty cool, so...
Oh, yeah.
We're all pretty pumped over there.
I think it's an awesome partnership that you guys have going there for sure. You can find me at Rowow, that's R-H-O-W-O-W on Twitter, and you can find this show at Hearth Casual. You can always email us at hearthcasual@gmail.com. Haven't gotten any emails too recently. Checked the mailbox not too long ago, so if you have something that you would like to ask us, send an email away, and we may very well read it on the show and talk about it on the show.
After BlizzCon, people always have a ton to react to. So there's the time to do that kind of thing, honestly. Let us know what you think about the Pirate expansion and how right Brian was.
What if it's both? I mean, why can't we have both? Pirates versus ninjas versus trolls.
You know, honestly, you just described the Siege of Zul'Dazar raid a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I have. I think I have.
Yeah, the Kul Tirans versus the Dandalari. Totally a thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, until episode 18, and I'm not sure exactly when episode 18 is going to drop, I will say this. If we get the opportunity to interview someone with a Hearthstone team, you better believe that Kevin and I are going to jump on that. So who knows? Keep your fingers crossed. But until the next time you hear from us, for Kevin Ellis, this is Brian Black reminding you once again, keep your expectations low. Or if you're hoping for a troll expansion, keep your expectations lower.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.